All right, we'll call to order the Stevensville Town Council meeting for January 24th, 2019. Ms. Trivancy, would you please call roll?
Mayor Dooty?
Here.
Councilmember Parker?
Here.
Councilmember Holcomb?
Here.
Councilmember Phillips?
Here.
And Councilmember Heisey?
Here. Okay, thank you. Please rise and join me in the pledge.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. There are no minutes to approve tonight due to the turnaround of the council packet. Next item on the agenda is approval of the biweekly claims. Ms. Holcomb.
I move that we approve of biweekly claims.
Is there a second? Mr. Michelson?
I second that.
Okay, it's been moved by Ms. Holcomb and seconded by Mr. Michelson to approve the biweekly claims. Council discussion. Ms. Holcomb.
Item for claim 14939 for Eagle Pump Servicing for $21,791. Was there three bids on this?
There was not three bids for that. Eagle Pump has been the primary company that will deal with our wells. We have trouble finding anybody to get done. It's within our budgeted authority, though. Any further questions? Okay. Public comment on the claims. Chief Molly.
Is that the only claim?
No.
I mean, those are the claims weren't in the packet, so I couldn't go through and look and see it.
Claims are not in the packet because we run claims now at the very end, right before the council meeting. And we don't post them on the screen because of the nature of them. So, unfortunately, that's the claim number, that's the total dollar amount. Sir.
So, I mean, it makes it hard for me to review the claims before they're approved.
Correct. You'll have to request a copy.
You want to look at them real quick?
All right, if there's no further discussion, I'll call for the vote. Councilmember Barker.
Aye.
Councilmember Phillips.
Aye.
Councilmember Michelson.
Aye.
And Councilmember Holcomb.
Aye.
Great, thank you. One spot in the back to sign. Next on the agenda is administrative reports. Fire Department, Chief Molly.
So, in your packet is the reports from both November and December. We had a pretty busy last couple of months. This month has been kind of hard on the fire department. We've done some close to home medical calls, so that's been pretty hard on the department and the members that were working through it, but it's going fine. You'll see that our end of the year total in the month of December is misstated at 568. We're actually up to 620-some calls for the year. We ended the year with just over 6,500 volunteer hours total for the year, which is up. The total dollar loss is still, and the December one is still off for the year because we have not gotten a report back from the fire investigators from the Steve Ecclesiastes fire. So there will be some more value loss through that reporting once we get that back. And that fire is still under investigation by the different insurance agencies' own investigators. They're still working through that. But all in all, it was pretty much business as usual throughout the year. Just keep on keeping on. We've seen some major changes in growth and things happen within the department. You know, we have the acquisition of the two Type 1 engines and the sale of two engines and the acquisition of the ambulance and getting it all aligned and up and running and ready to be a transporting billable service. So all those things have happened throughout the year, kind of as a year-end report deal. Tomorrow night is our annual banquet. I believe everybody has been invited and some of you guys are attending. So any questions for the year or the last 2 months?
Any questions for the chief?
Okay. Okay, so what I've asked is I've asked to move my report to the council meeting at the beginning of the month to coincide with our training event and our training calendar. That way be able to go to training events. Tonight is an all-company training event going on out in 3 miles, so that's usually at the end of the month, so that's why we're switching around, so you get to see me again shortly without a whole lot to talk about because it'll be just 2 weeks from now. But anyway, that's the reason why we changed that, is to coincide with our drills and council meetings. So. Okay, thanks.
Appreciate that. Mr. Michelson.
The engine 2510 is no longer there, is it?
2510 is there, yes. Is there? 2510, the number just denotes the station.
Oh, okay.
So, yes, we're still running 2010, but it's now a Pierce, and 2510 is now the sister to 2010. So they're both Pierces, rather than the KME and the old International.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, the numbers, yeah.
The vehicles are gone, the numbers stay the same when you put them in the...
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah. First number is the station, and then the second two numbers denote what type of apparatus it is.
Okay.
Yeah.
Confusing. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thanks, Chief. The building report is included in your packet, and there's no airport board, or excuse me, airport report tonight. We'll move on. There are no guests to recognize. We'll move on to correspondence. I have a couple of letters that have come in. You have them on your table before you tonight, that came in after the packet was published. Dated January 24th, 2019. Mr. Mayor and members of the City Council, I am Cheryl Olson, 304 10th Street in Stevensville. I am a lifelong student of government and have enjoyed observing and occasionally speaking at your meetings. I regret that I cannot attend tonight's meeting in person. Three issues have caught my attention on tonight's agenda. I do not have the benefit of hearing your discussion of these issues at the meeting, but since I cannot attend, I at least offer my perspective. Number one, new business item 10F, to cease recording and broadcasting town council meetings. I don't have the benefit of hearing the rationale for this proposal, but as a town resident, this is alarming to me. I was involved with the Montana legislature for over 30 years and watched the transition from closed door meetings to now totally transparent recorded broadcasted meetings. The change was dramatic in terms of how ideas were vetted and how citizens could participate and understand how their elected officials were making decisions in their interest. A decision by the City Council to step backwards and shut down communication does not encourage the public's participation in their government. I urge my council members to not support this proposal. Item number two, new business, item G, 10G, to require certain city employees to be residents of the city. Again, without the benefit of hearing the rationale of this proposal, I am confused by the insertion of a residency requirement for these positions. The law that is cited in the agenda, MCA 7-4-4104, refers to qualifications set by the local government for elected or appointed positions. Qualifications, by common definition, means a quality or skill that fits a person, as for an office, not residency. I urge my council members to not support this proposal. Item three, new business, item 10C, to abolish the park board. After reading the narrative attached to this proposal, I remain confused as to why the council would want to have less people involved in the governance of our community. I urge my council members to not support this proposal. Thank you for your consideration of my perspective. Next item is dated January 23rd, 2019. From a series of Stevensville small business owners, Mayor Dewey, and town council members. It has come to our attention that there are two significant items on today's meeting agenda that will directly affect us as small business owners in Stevensville. The first item that concerns us is the elimination of the town of Stevensville's Facebook page. We all use this page as a tool. We appreciate and routinely rely on the consistent updates about plowing, school delays, emergencies, and town events. The Facebook live feed for council meetings allows us to keep up to date with town matters, both big and small, that we don't read in the newspaper. Although two of us are not Stevensville residents, what happens in this town directly affects our businesses. Please keep this page open to the public, as government matters should be transparent. The second agenda item of concern is requiring the entire staff of the town of Stevensville to be residents of the town. We find this to be irrational. The clerk of the court, deputy clerk, and finance officer/treasurer are all extremely qualified to do their respective jobs. They work with residents and business members in a professional and courteous manner. These positions do not require any of the employees to respond to emergency situations or require on-call status. It is commendable to want to hire town residents for positions, but we need to hire the best qualified applicants and not be biased of their home addresses. As professionals who conduct business in this town, we would prefer to work with qualified and competent employees. Stevensville has always been an inviting and pleasant town to work, recreate, volunteer, and support. The actions of a few government officials have left a dark stain on the town. The purpose of town government is to serve the community which elected them, not to push self-serving agendas. There has been a public display of resentment between the town council and the current and past administrations. We as small business owners in Stevensville ask that you put aside personal conflict and grudges. Please remember, each official was elected for the greater good of the people of Stevensville. Thank you for your consideration. Please contact us if you have any questions or concerns. Sincerely, Dr. Amy Berglund, owner, Active Care Family Chiropractic. Renee Christensen, office manager, Active Care Family Chiropractic. Andrea Buchanan, owner, Cedar and Sage Herbal Medicine. James Fix, owner, Your Energy Fix. Shirley Holmes, owner, Sama Massage. And Christine Messix. All right, that concludes the correspondence portion of the agenda. We'll move on to public comment. Public comment is an opportunity to comment on anything on tonight's agenda or under the jurisdiction of the town of Stevensville. Please make sure you sign the public comment sheet at the door, step forward to the podium, state your name and address for the record. Public comment, Mr. Moore.
Well, I just thought I would start out tonight by, my name is Joe Moore, 514 Central. Getting ready for attending the meeting tonight. As I usually do, I go through whatever is available. I looked at our website tonight, and I just want to send out a little reminder. Reminded me, and it should remind everyone, from the Town of Stevensville Facebook page, and your pictures are all on that, by the way. This is a little write-up. This is at the end of the write-up about the Town of Stevensville. The Town of Stevensville from the Montana Genesis. It finalizes this little quote by saying, "The town's charm has remained unchanged. Stevensville sees itself as a typical small town where neighbors greet each other and take care of each other. We are proud of living in such a strong and vibrant community." Just a reminder.
Further public comment. Mr. Vinson.
Good evening, Mayor, Council Members, I'm Audrey Tribbency, I'm your Town Clerk. Because of some of the items on tonight's agenda that directly and indirectly involve me, and the supporting documents submitted in the Council packet that include inaccurate, wrong assumptions, and questionable information, I would like to address you tonight and the public under this item rather than each individual item. My comments tonight are directed at Council Members Michelson, Holcomb, and Barker. They are not directed at you, Council Member Jared Phillips. In regards to Agenda Item 10E, Discussion, Responsibilities of the Mayor to Enforce Council Rules During Council Meetings, an item requested by Council Members Michelson and Barker, reading the supplemental documentation, it is safe to say that Council is concerned that the Mayor is not following the rules. Council documents submitted for this item list two examples. One, submission of agenda item request, and two, and this is troubling for me, the accusation that the Mayor on several occasions has allowed, and I'm quoting, has allowed members of the public and staff to spread unfounded allegations about members of the public, belittle and bully members of the council, and allow intimidation to be used against the council in order to influence the decisions of several council members. End of quote. Michelson and Barker referenced the November 8th council meeting when council initially chose Mr. Jim Cruz to fill the vacant council seat. but later they rescinded this motion and picked our council member Jerry Phillips. At this meeting, various members of the public spoke. They spoke professionally, they spoke intelligently, and they spoke rationally about their opinions on who should fill this seat. It is the public's absolute right and civic duty to participate in their government, to keep their elected and appointed officials and representatives informed of their concerns, their opinions, and ideas, and to weigh in on who they feel is the best candidate to serve as their, the public's, council representative. I believe, and to use Mr. Michelson's word, it is shameful that council is seeking to direct the mayor to break the law and repress the public's participation in the decision-making process. Montana Code Annotated provides very specific regulations that support public participation. To repress public participation, I don't understand why you would want to do that. The hypocrisy of that item as it relates to item 10F, discussion decision, council direction to the mayor to abolish all town social media websites and cease video recording and broadcasting of town council meetings, also submitted by council members Michelson and Parker. So remember, I just talked about the last item, 10E, where council wants to direct the mayor to suppress or repress the public's input so we don't influence council's decision-making process. But this item basically is providing that, accusing the mayor of censoring public comment. The council under this item wrongfully accuses the mayor and staff of monitoring and editing the comments on the town's public social media website. The monitoring, this is what I quote from the council packet, the monitoring and censorship of any social media website is not prescribed duty of the clerk or any other member of the staff or elected officials. I find that interesting. Council, you must have forgotten that our job descriptions are examples of typical duties and responsibilities. And there's this other item called in all other duties as assigned. But nonetheless, council states in their backup documentation, censorship of public comments may be a violation of the right of free speech and expression under the First Amendment of the Constitution of the United States. Ironically, this is exactly what council is directing the mayor to do under agenda item 10E, censor the public's comments to ensure that the public is not influencing council's decision-making process. Folks, we can't have it both ways. A little bit of background on this item that the public may not be aware of, and I suspect is the primary reason behind council member Michelson and Barker's request to abolish all town social media websites and cease recording of the meetings. If you look back on any of the videos that are on our Facebook webpage of the council meeting, you will see that most of the comments on those video recordings are spouses of our council members, and very few comments from anybody else in the public, but mainly our spouses of council members. And there is concern that staff is monitoring and deleting or not including these comments that are being made. Not true. Staff is not doing that. We're not doing that at all. The town's social media website, Facebook, has a profanity filter in place, which means Facebook, not staff, automatically hides comments that fall into Facebook's filter parameters. Facebook does not delete, but rather hides the profane and vulgar comments. I find it ironic that in one agenda item, direct the mayor to censor public comments. And then the next agenda item, don't censor the spouse's comments, which we're not doing. Back to 10E, discussion responsibility of the mayor to enforce council rules during council meetings. This was also requested by council members Michelson and Barker. In their backup documentation, they indicate that if an agenda item request is submitted and it will not be considered during a requested meeting time, the mayor or the clerk is obligated to contact the person submitting the request and advise the person as to when it will be considered, and if not, why it won't be considered. What council members Michelson and Barker are referring to is another agenda item on tonight's meeting agenda, 9C, discussion and decision to revote on a resolution to vacate an alley. This was originally brought forward by council members Barker and Holcomb to be placed on an earlier council agenda. However, because of the council rules, the mayor did not place that agenda item on that agenda as requested, but in accordance with the council rules informed both council member Holcomb and Barker that it was not going to be placed as requested. If the mayor had, in fact, placed that item on the agenda as requested, the mayor would have been in violation of the town council rules. Specifically, placing this item on the agenda violates two separate laws. And as you fondly remind everyone, Mr. Michelson, the law is the law. These two regulations or laws include 1, Council Rules Part 5, Order of Business Section 2, Motion to Reconsider. A motion, and I'm going to read exactly what it says, a motion to reconsider any action may be made at any time before or during the second regularly scheduled meeting after such action is taken. So this action was taken on October 22nd. Since that time, there's been approximately 10 meetings. So clearly, placing this on to reconsider a motion is in violation of the town council rules. Additionally, the town attorney has previously and subsequently provided information to the council that there are a number of legal requirements that have to take place first before council can consider this item. Those legal requirements have not been met. So, ironically, the hypocrisy of these two items, 10E and 9C, is ludicrous. What council appears to be saying essentially is the mayor, you must follow the rules. Unless council doesn't want you to follow that rule and place the agenda item on, even though it doesn't meet our rules, and council can pick and choose which rules they may or may not follow. Regarding council member Michelson and Barker's item 10D, discussion decision to the mayor to establish an office for the town council and a council reference library, they state that the mayor has restricted council's access to the town hall, including town council records. First of all, they're not town council records. They're the town's records. They state that this doing so is creating an adversarial condition between elected officials and staff. They further state that this is inhibiting the ability of council to perform its functions as a legislative body and is fostering a hostile, unfriendly, and insubordinate condition in town hall. They further state that the mayor has determined that town hall staff must supervise elected officials in the performance of their work. Simply not true. And as a result, council is requesting a secured office for exclusive use of the town council, available 24/7, with a copy machine, a fax machine, a desktop computer, and a phone. The office will have no video or audio recording devices of any kind. I ask, why this demand? What are you, council, trying to hide from the public with such a blatant lack of transparency? Further, as you are all aware, as public officials, you have no right to privacy. As citizens, you do. You have a right to privacy. But as a public official representing the citizens of Stevensville, the public's right to know outweighs your right to privacy. Council authorized the installation of video cameras to monitor our citizens who frequent the Lewis and Clark Park. demands that no videoing or recording of any kind be allowed when council is performing their elected and appointed duties in a public facility. Bill Number 10. Council also demands that the office will be equipped with a presentable desk, chair, guest chairs, and a meeting table. In response to this request, I ask council, where in Town Hall do you want this office and meeting space? And how do you plan to fund this expenditure? I find it to be extremely interesting how you're going to find the funds for this when we're really struggling to fund and staff our police department. I think that's a much higher priority. Also noteworthy, you council have once again jumped to a wrong conclusion. The mayor did not determine that council members must be supervised in the performance of their work. Nobody said that. I don't know where that comes from. As a town clerk, I am obligated by law to maintain the integrity of all the town's documents and records. So it was me, not the mayor, who informed Mr. Michelson that I'm happy to provide you with any copies of documents that you want. But I will not hand over the original copies or original documents of the town's laws and regulations and ordinances. I won't do that. The originals are the originals. There are no backups. If something happens to those original documents, we don't have the originals anymore. This is very concerning to me and should be to the public. Last September, the town experienced a significant and serious situation regarding the deletion of over 500 town documents, electronic files. These were important files. They were important to our daily function. They were stored in a shared online software program called Dropbox. Dropbox was the town's way of sharing its documents between the staff, the mayor, and council. And it was our way to post our documents to the web page. The only people who had authorized access to Dropbox were staff, the mayor, and council. However, Mr. Michelson took it upon himself to add citizens Jim Cruz and Mark Adams to Dropbox, who both had full and unrestricted access to these towns' important documents. Well, Mr. Cruz and Mr. Adams have the right to public documents, absolutely. They do not have special rights to allow them privileges that all the other citizens do not have. When investigating the deletion of the over 500 town document files, we learned through the Dropbox electronic paper trail that all of these documents were deleted through Mr. Bob Michelson's home computer. So I ask you, why as a town clerk should I hand over original documents to anyone? It's important to note two things. Dropbox requires you to delete each file individually. And then it asks you again, are you really sure you want to delete this? Because you're going to delete this document for everybody. So you have to delete each file two times. So you had to hit that key over 1,000 times. This was not an accident. This was intentional. So I ask you, council and the public, why, again, would I give the original files, the original town documents, the laws and ordinances to any member of the public, including council, without supervision? I will give you, anybody who requests copies, absolutely 100%, but I will not give the original documents out. We were fortunate that the deleted files we were able to restore. But original files, if they're destroyed, tampered with, the integrity's gone. We don't have any way to restore those documents. And I personally would be negligent in my duties and the performance of my job if I did not responsibly ensure the safety of all of the town's documents. I am bound by law to do so. And furthermore, this would constitute a violation of my oath and the bond. In conclusion, I must state that I find it interesting that based on several of the items placed on tonight's agenda by council members Michelson and Barker, that it appears this council finds it unacceptable for the public to bully and intimidate council members, but perfectly acceptable for the council to bully and intimidate the mayor and staff. Thank you.
Further public comment? Mr. Marcus.
What's going on after that? Aye. It's been a long time since I've made public comment at the meetings here in town. Let me first say, my wife and I have been here for 34 years, and I'm going to make a couple comments, so what I'm trying to avoid is someone saying, well, you're not from here. I'm a taxpaying citizen from here for more than 30 years of business in town and properties. When I saw one of the agenda items about the website, I did a little research, and I called the Montana State Library and talked to the director of the publications librarian, Jim Kemerson. And I posed the question to him, does the state have any records of cities and towns that do or do not have websites to disseminate public information? And he directed me to Wikipedia, of all places, where you can get a list of Montana cities and towns. And when I clicked on Wikipedia cities and towns, I found the list of 129 cities and towns in Montana according to the 2010 census. And I clicked on each one of them and made a little paper chart for myself as a yes or no, they do or don't have links to websites and other further public information. And what I was able to ascertain was that 81 of the 129 have links, equaling 63%. 48 do not have links, equaling 37%. On this chart, they also have the populations of each of these towns. And the average population of the 48 towns that do not have websites is 503. The 2010 census gives Stevensville a population of 1,809, more than three times what the average town is that doesn't bother to have a website. And of the 48 that didn't have a website, the number was actually higher until I started individually clicking on the town names and doing Google searches and found that they did. So this information may not be completely accurate, but clearly it would be in the favor. The number would go up, not go down. So 63% of towns have websites, 37% do not. Then further, I went to the Montana Law Library, and I was just curious about dissemination of public information, and I know this just been mentioned a little while ago. MCA Title Comments 2017, Title II, Chapter 6, Part 10, is Public Access to Information, Safety and Security Exemptions, Montana Historic Society Exemption. Anyway, there are two exemptions. Basically, it's like if you have an ongoing police investigation, you don't have to disseminate public information about it. And apparently, the Montana Historical Society has a private list of donors that do not have to be made public. With those two exceptions, the code 26101003 reads, access to public information, public and secured exemptions, Montana Historical Society exempt, as I just said. Exemptions provided in subsequent 2 and 3. Every person has a right to examine and obtain a copy of any public information in this state. I assume, since Stevensville is in the state, that we all have access to public information. I would think that having it recorded with audiovisual equipment captures much more of the nuance and cadence and tone in someone's voice who's appearing through the console, whereas a stenographer who's writing something down is never going to be able to capture if someone said something sarcastically or empathetically in some way. And certainly the audiovisual equipment to record these meetings would seem to me be a less expensive way to provide public information, as the state law says we are actually required to do. As to the people living, or not, the members of the staff here living or not living in town, as I said, I've lived here for 34 years, but I did come from a big city, Chicago, and that was an issue in Chicago. And a simple way that they resolved it was that the non-essential members, like staffing members, were exempt and could live anywhere they wanted as long as they could get to work on time. and essential members like police and fire simply needed to live within X minutes from the headquarters. And maybe that's a simple way to resolve that issue, is that, you know, provided that the police chief and the fire chief can get to an emergency or can get to the building here within 10 or 15 minutes from wherever they live, maybe outside the city limits, you know, that's maybe that's a reasonable way to resolve that there's no foul there, and everybody and the jobs are being done. Anyway, I hope you will not support the removing and, you know, the public access information through our town website. I think it's a wonderful way that we can both obviously make comments, but also gain information about what's going on in town. Thank you.
I'm Anne Marie McCormick, 005 College Street. Not new to some of you, I had thrown my hat in, so not a new face, but I'm kind of glad I didn't get it after a couple of these meetings. I'll be honest, I'm kind of appalled. The courage and the ability to articulate the ideas and your opinions, I'm very proud of you. I'm voting against, obviously, I'm asking you to represent us and not vote C, D, E, F, and G. I'm not sure, are we going to have a discussion here, I assume, of why this is even? Okay, good. I am representing a number of people from Jerry, there's a couple of people can chat. Okay? Thank you.
Any further public comment? Mr. Sharkey.
Michael Sharkey, 203 St. Mary's Drive. I'm not going to get into the politics or the ethics about what you're doing. I'd just like to suggest, though, that on the issue of social media and sending out your meetings to the public via the internet and that type of thing, is a big advantage to people, for example, that are handicapped. Those people may not have the ability to get to a meeting. This is watching it on the internet is their only opportunity to participate in their town's government. And we can probably get into discovering several other people, like people with children, can't afford a babysitter to come to a meeting. Maybe the weather's so bad they can't get out of their driveway. Here's an opportunity to spread the word to all of the constituents rather than just a handful that have the ability to show up at the meeting. So I'd like to encourage you to think about the practical aspects of communicating with your constituents via social media.
My name is Jan Perrin, and I live at 503 Charlo. Looking at your 8 agenda items, and after listening to our clerk, and after coming to meetings, and being told that it was very intimidating, Stacy, for Bill and I to come to your meetings, we decided to stay home and watch them on the internet, as to not be intimidating to you or to be accused of being bullying. So then we sit home and we watch your meetings, and then you make a comment, well, where are they all now? Well, they met your request and they stayed home. I would like to challenge you to spend as much time representing the good people in our community as you do to disrupt what you were voted to do, the processes. It appears that you're more concerned about being disruptive as to doing good things for our community. I'd like to speak to one more thing, and Jerry, please, I'm not referring to you. I'd like to speak to one more thing, and that is the abolishing of our park board. If you look around our community, all the things, all the wonderful improvements that have happened in our community, the park, the skateboard, the baseball diamonds, the soccer fields, all were done by your community members for no money as volunteers, and you want to abolish a park board, requesting your community members to no longer serve our community and improve it? I'm sorry, but I don't know where your heads are. You need to think about our community and the people in it. There are a lot of good people here. Thank you.
Any further public comment? Okay. We'll move on to unfinished business. Discussion decision regarding the visitor kiosk to be located at Veterans Park. This item is submitted primarily because, as you know, we signed on to support the kiosk project in Veterans Park through in-kind donations. That was primarily dirt and concrete work. At the time when we signed on to do that under the Cruz administration, we had the staff in-house and we had access to concrete tools and that sort of equipment to do the concrete work and the dirt work. Public Works brought it to our attention that with the current plan, we have the ability to do the dirt work. However, we don't have the ability to do concrete work anymore. Mr. Sutherland obviously no longer works for us. He primarily owned the equipment to do that type of work. And so we placed this on the council's agenda just to kind of get a sense as to how far the council is willing to go in supporting the project further. There may be an expense to having concrete work done. Again, we can do the dirt work to prepare for the concrete, but the actual concrete work is something that we will probably incur a cost on. And to that end, the Public Works Director is reaching out to some other sources, including the Job Corps, to see what it will take to accomplish that goal. Audrey, do we have an update? Has George been able to reach Job Corps?
Job Corps has not responded.
They haven't responded yet. Okay. We're not necessarily proposing a motion or anything like that. I more or less wanted to get a sense of the council's to how you'd like to support the project going forward. And we can always come back once we hear from Job Corps as well. Mr. Phillips?
I've got involved with that today. I visited the center down here and I made a phone call to Trapper Creek Job Corps trying to get a hold of the supervisor of the concrete shop, mm-hmm. trying to see what we can do there, and I was unable to get a hold of him. But they do community work, you know, different projects, and this would be a good project for the Job Corps. If worse comes to worse, I used to be a concrete finisher. Still have my hand tools. Okay. You know, all we did do is excavate it, get it warmed up. There's 5.5 yards of concrete on that. But if worse comes to worse, you know, if I could get a couple of strong men and we could pour it ourselves.
Sure.
So, but Job Corps, I think, would be a good place to start. And, you know, looking over the proposal, this would be a good economic boost for us, you know, because we get a kiosk there that's open 24/7. The State Department can put a sign out on the highway directing visitors into our community, you know, which might increase our tax base. So this would be a good opportunity, you know, to go ahead with this project and get it in, installed.
Sure.
So.
Okay. Any other feedback? Okay, so I think from this point, the feedback I'm hearing is that let's kind of wait and see what the Job Corps comes back with. And from there, we can possibly pull together maybe a volunteer team to help with that work. If there's any other expenditures involved, then we'll come back to council and get your sense of that.
Sure.
Okay. We are moving on to item B, discussion decision to consider possible town council meeting format options. If you recall, we held or we've had some workshops and we've had some discussions at council meetings about format of our meeting, whether we hold one council meeting a month and a committee of the whole meeting, or some sort of administrative preview meeting to kind of discuss the items on the forthcoming agenda before we actually come to the meeting. All those meetings obviously being public. Before the first of the year, it was kind of the sense that we needed to just wait until after the year and let the dust settle, so to speak, and let you guys kind of think about what kind of meeting format you'd like to see. And so we've placed this on the agenda tonight for your discussion. Impossible decision, if you so choose. Ms. Holcomb.
Well, like I said previously, I think having too many meetings, I know with having meetings and volunteering, you get burnt out, and I think having too many meetings would burn not only us out, but the community out. I'm good with having the two meetings that we have a month, mm-hmm. and if we need to have a cow meeting, then we can schedule a cow meeting.
Okay. Any other council insight? Mr. Michelson?
I agree with Council Member Holcomb.
Okay.
I sustain that. Yeah.
So it sounds like we'll keep the system as it is today and schedule cow meetings on an as-needed basis. All right. Moving on to unfinished C, 9C, a discussion decision to revote on resolution of the town of Stevensville, Montana, to vacate the 40-foot alley running through Block 17, Lots 3 through 18 of the original town site of Stevensville, leaving utility easement. It looks like Ms. Holcomb and Ms. Barker submitted the item. Ms. Holcomb.
Well, after hearing some more information on this, I felt that we should revisit this. But then I guess I haven't seen the email, but I guess it was an email from our attorney that we should probably table this until we have a public hearing.
Go ahead and finish.
So if that's what our attorney is telling us that we should do, then I would make a motion that we table this until we have a public hearing.
Let me, since you've referred to it, I do have it available, because it went out at 10 o'clock this morning, so I understand some of you may not have had a chance to read it. So this is from Brian West, city attorney. To Jerry Phillips, Stacy Barker, Bob Michelson, Robin Holcomb, and Brandon Dewey. All, I am resending similar information from the last time that the alley vacation matter came before council because the membership of the council has changed. The vacation of alleyways and streets is governed by MCA 7-14-4114. It is permissive but not mandatory for council to discontinue an alley when in receipt of a valid petition. They can consider the question when presented with a petition in writing from A, all owners of lots on the alley, or B, a written petition from more than 50% of the owners, coupled with a majority vote of the council. There is also provision for vacation related to school purposes, not at issue here. Before the council takes action on the petition, there are conditions. First, a notice must be published defining when the petition will be voted on and what alley is asked to be vacated. Second, the first line of MCA 7-14-4114 requires that the determination be made that vacating can be, quote, without detriment to the public interest, end quote. which should be part of the council's discussion and decision. Lastly, vacation under MCA 7-14-4114 shall not affect any utility easements by 7-14-4115. Any agreement to vacate an alleyway must reserve and protect existing utility easements. I note from the packet that I do not see any survey or platted map of the area to be vacated. Brian. Mr. Michelson.
I talked to Brian tonight, and he thought everything was on good. The only thing he did not see, as you just stated, Mayor Dewey, was this, the map, the platted map, and utility easement. And he thought that we were satisfied with that, and we could go ahead and set up a public hearing, another public hearing, and then take it to the following council meeting after that to discuss it.
Okay. Ms. Trivancy, is a public hearing required?
Yes, it is.
Public hearing, we do a public notice of the hearing, then we do the hearing, and then they bring it to council.
Yes.
That is correct. So we would notice it in the paper for two meetings that we're going to hold a public hearing, then we will hold the public hearing, and then we will hold a decision, discussion, and action like the
So we do need at least 2 weeks to publish a notice in the paper, because those would be 7 days apart. Mr. Michelson.
It is my understanding through Carolyn that you did have the utility easement on your desk somewhere, a copy of it? Or?
No.
Yes.
We do not have a survey of the property.
Oh, the survey, no. But you do have the petition with 100% owners in file, right?
Correct, from the first agenda item. Can that be resurrected?
I think that in speaking with the town attorney, Brian West, he said that this is a new application. We start from the beginning and go through the whole legal noticing requirements. You submit a new application with all the required information to make a decision.
Okay. So based on that information, in order to move forward in considering an alley vacate, we need to start the process over with a new petition. We need a survey marking where an easement would go, provided with that petition.
Were those the same signatures, or was that a different set of signatures?
If the first one had all but two owners, and then the second one said to vacate the alley, leaving a utilities easement, and I had 100% owners sign it.
So that's new.
That's new, and I brought it to you, Mr. Dewey, at the end of October with Mr. Curtis.
Okay.
So you said you didn't think it was appropriate to waste the council members' time because they'd already voted against it. Therefore, I didn't get it on the agenda within the two meetings because I was conferring with people that knew what was my next legal step to do. And so doing that, I went to the Department of Revenue, and they said that if they vacated with utilities easement, that the town would get approximately $85.45, which isn't much, but it's better in the kitty than elsewhere, from the taxpayers a year. I have a photocopy of an aerial view of it. The blue denotes my property. It also denotes the alley. A question that I have for Mr. West, I was hoping he would be here, is that 1/4 of the alley is already vacated. Does that set a precedence that the other might go through with utilities easement? And Mr. Michelson came and observed the property, and it's quite evident where the sewer system is because it has sunk. And Mom had a clothesline that she draped across it so she'd remember where that sewer line was. So it does show on the photo, it shows the alley that was never an alley. It was platted as an alley, never used as one. So I have that. And then I also have a copy of the survey.
And the extra page is because she cut off some of it, so she wanted to make sure it was legal. So here is the survey. And let's see. My other question was, if after we have the public meeting, we have to 2 weeks, and then we have to have the public hearing. So what you're telling me is that the new petition that I gave you that has 100% signatures, I have to take a copy of that and go have all those people sign it again?
Mr. Mayor?
Yes.
What I would recommend is that we accept that petition and just send a letter out to those homeowners saying that if we're submitting this, moving it forward as a signed petition, and if they have any objections to that, to let us know.
Okay.
Like you did before, right?
And yeah, we'll send. We have to do another mailing.
Thank you.
So I don't I was confused between the first petition and the second petition. I apologize. What we do need in order to move forward is we need a survey of the entire alley and all the properties that are being asked to vacate. We have your survey. That is yours, correct?
I think it's the whole block. What do you think? It has Second Street, or Mission Street, it has Buck Street, and it has the whole thing.
Yeah,
yes?
Yeah, pretty, okay.
And here's the extra part that got cut off.
Audrey, do you want to look at this?
I don't look at it right now.
Okay. We'll have to evaluate and see if this is acceptable, because what it does is it locates your pins, but it doesn't locate pins for any other property.
What, you expect me to pay for a survey for all of their property?
Do you expect the town?
Well, I'm asking you.
Yes, we'd expect you and the property owner to survey your property. I don't think that it's fair to the taxpayers the alley is fine currently. We're okay with the alley since we denied vacating it. So if you expect us to reconsider a vacating of the alley, then the cost should be burdened onto the property owners requesting that, not onto the rest of the community.
So I have to go knock on their doors and ask for a copy of their surveys. Mm-hmm. And do you realize that because that is fourth generation property over there, it's probably never been surveyed as being really surveyed?
That's likely.
And the only other part that's been surveyed is to the south, that little tiny section, and possibly Mr. Curtis's. The apartment house has been surveyed, and possibly the one that Jamie has, the little house out back. Mm-hmm. So I need to go knock on doors, right?
Yes. Ms. Curtis.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Mayor. Council members, Carolyn Nickens. What we need in order to process this is a new survey. So it doesn't really matter what has been surveyed in the past. The survey needs to show where we're going to be giving back property from the right of the alleyway to the property owners. So it'll show new property lines for all the properties that are getting the 20 feet on each side of that, the division of the alley. So we'll need that to show the new property lines included in the survey.
And why wasn't I made aware of that since like June?
I think we had a conversation, and I think you were unclear on that, and I think the mayor and I did try and talk to you, and you were saying you were going to do your part, and whoever in the town would be doing the rest of that part. We did have that conversation. The other thing that needs to be included in that survey is a delineation of the utility easement. So there's a legal description included that defines where our utility easements exist and the access for the town staff to access those utilities. And I'm happy to sit down and talk to you outside of this meeting and go over everything that we would need to do.
So doesn't the town have the delineated area? Because Ed put it in, and wouldn't George know where it was? Isn't there one already platted?
You want me to address it? Is that what you asked?
Well,
I'm sorry.
My understanding is there isn't really.
No, we have some as-built drawings. I mean, but we we didn't necessarily plat where our lines go when that line was installed specifically.
Right.
And so the best we can do is locate it. We have locators.
Right.
We can locate physically where that line is.
Right.
And then the survey company generally will then draw that into the surveying map.
So those people that own the property, if they had their surveys done 2017, maybe it was in 2018, are those acceptable, or do they have to do it again?
What we're seeking is one map that is a survey of the entire block that shows where existing property lines are now and where new proposed property lines are and where the easement would lie.
Well, it wouldn't have to be the whole block because you already vacated that one. You didn't, but somebody did.
Correct. So whatever
just my section.
Whatever is affected needs to be surveyed.
And that's a nice way for you guys to get it done without having to pay a penny.
Like I said, we're fine with the alley the way it is. You're the one asking to vacate.
No, I'm not the only one asking to vacate. All the owners want it vacated so that they can keep what they have.
And like I said, if they have an interest in vacating the alley, then they have to foot that cost. It's not fair to the town to have to do that, especially when we haven't budgeted for a survey of that block.
Interesting.
The town really has nothing to gain by vacating that block.
Well, you get $85 a year.
Out of a $6 million budget.
$85?
$600,000 budget. It doesn't really... Sorry, $85 is immaterial for given what runs back there.
So then if it isn't that important to you, then it shouldn't be that important to have everybody taking on the survey. If it's not that important to you, then why can't you check and see where that sewer line is and just go with flow?
The law doesn't allow us to go with the flow.
Well, then.
So I apologize. I don't
so
write
within
the
2 weeks, I have to have these surveys done. Because we have a public notice, right?
To clarify, once we have the complete application with all the information that council needs to consider to make their decision, then we will do the public notice and send out the letters to the property owners and start that noticing process all over again. That's once we have the information.
What information?
I just...
The survey?
Oh, you have to have the other surveys.
We have to have one survey of every property affected.
And that doesn't show everybody's property?
That doesn't show where the old lines would be or where the old lines are compared to where the new lines would be. It doesn't show an easement.
That shows an easement.
No, it shows an alley.
Right.
That's not an easement. An alley is different than an easement.
So I have to find the pipeline.
So what we're looking for, Carolyn, and I'll do this briefly because we'd like to move on. So
would I.
We want a survey of basically these properties.
Right.
Okay. Showing where the old boundary lines are and pins, right? Because this is what this shows, is where your pins are. We want to see all of this. And then what we want to see is where the new line would be, which in theory, if we gave 20 feet back to each side, 40 feet, so 20 feet to each, there should be a line down here, down the middle of this. And then there should be some sort of, it probably would be a dash line or some sort of notation showing where the easement would exist. There's currently no easement on this property. We own it.
I know.
And so there wouldn't be an easement. We wouldn't grant an easement to ourselves. So essentially the easement would follow probably the 40-foot line for simplicity, but it could be narrower. Does that make sense? So it needs to be one. It would be just one piece of paper like this.
Yeah.
But it's going to be a survey of all of these properties.
Okay.
Showing new lines and old.
And why can't I go to the courthouse and get a copy of that? Because they have to have this filed at the courthouse.
Because those documents aren't going to have the new line on them.
Oh. Okay.
That's why you need a new survey, is to determine exactly where the new line would go.
All right.
Okay. And like Ms. Trivency indicated, we're happy to sit down with you one-on-one and go back through that process. We can create a checklist of some kind to help you
That would be nice, because everything keeps popping up, and this is changing and that's changing, so yeah, that would be good.
Right. Any further discussion from council? Okay, since there's no decision being made tonight, we'll move on. New business, item A, presentation and discussion regarding Stevensville Police Department's Crime Watch program. Ms. Berthau.
Thank you. I am going to give this presentation tonight. Chief Marvel was not able to attend. He is actually doing some undercover work tonight for a new felony case that just came on his lap over the last 24 hours. So I will give this to my best of abilities. And any questions at the end, please, if you want to discuss that tonight or make time later on to meet with me, that would be great as well. Chief Marble and myself have been working on this since last year, started like in the summer, just kind of trying to decide how to form a Stevensville Crime Watch program for our town. And so we have brought to you guys Stevensville Crime Watch 2019. Time, location, and crime, that's where we're going to kind of go with this, is using the TLC as our basis of... I gotta be closer to this here.
Can we switch it?
Nope, good. Thank you. So time, really looking at when that incident occurred, the date, the time, our location, address, the general area where that crime has taken place, and then of course the nature of that crime. So we're gonna use these three pieces as really our basis of the Crime Watch. Stevensville Crime Watch is managed by volunteers and is supported by the Stevensville Police Department. The Stevensville Crime Watch is a program that has been formed to bring together law enforcement, the community members, and local entities to help reduce crime in our town. And Stevensville Crime Watch promotes the community safety one neighborhood at a time. TLC, like we said before, but also tender loving care. Stevensville Crime Watch understands the time that goes into caring for our families, our homes, and ourselves, and so we'd like to use some of that TLC to take care of our neighborhood and our town. So just real quick, a few things that the Stevensville Crime Watch will do, and just a few that we will not do as members of the community or as Crime Watch captains. Report crimes and suspicious activities. Educate citizens on how to identify and report those suspicious activities in their neighborhoods. Learn how to make your home more secure. We'll do that through having some different companies coming into town and being able to give us examples of ways that we can kind of beef up security in our own homes. Watch out for each other and the neighborhood. Keep each other alert and informed. And then holding meetings to discuss those concerns, introduce new neighbors, and update the community of what's going on. Things that the Crime Watch will not do, they will not enforce the law, we will not be making arrests, and the approaching a situation or a person committing a crime. And those were three really big pieces that Chief Marble brought into that, was just, that's the reminder. We're here to help educate our neighborhoods and watch out for what's going on, but remembering those three big pieces that the Crime Watch will not be doing. That goes back to law enforcement.
You took all the fun out of it.
Sorry.
No handcuffs with this gig?
No handcuffs. Maybe a fancy hat, but that's about it. Stevensville Police Department calls for service. So we just wanted to show where in 2017 we had 438 calls for service, and in 2018 we had 652. So the jump over just that 1 year, the Stevensville Crime Watch, we really hope will, not that it's going to lessen those numbers as the years go on, but it is going to give us more awareness of what's going on in town. Really quick, we just put together a zone map. There's a 9 different zones for the Crime Watch, and a Crime Watch captain being picked for each of those zones. So. I will make sure that these are on the website as well, and I've got some copies of those today if you guys want to take any of those home with you. Stevensville Crime Watch zones, like I said, there's 9 of them. We broke them into streets and some that involve just downtown districts and also River Park as a zone as itself. That one can even be held as someone that is not living in the city limits and that can help out with that piece as well. Let's keep Stevensville safe, one neighborhood at a time. You guys, anyone that you know or yourselves are interested, fill out an application with us and we will get it turned over to the chief to look over. Thanks. Any questions? Yeah, Joe?
Just a question about identifying, with regard to identifying certain neighborhoods.
Mm-hmm.
I live on Central. Central is I don't know how many cul-de-sacs we have in the town. I don't know how many streets are. But we get a lot of people that drive down our street and just make a circle and go back. We have a lot of young kids, and a lot of people leave their driveways open. Is it something where you could identify a street with a sign that says no outlet or is that something that can happen or you know where is that something
I think I put that back to you, Mayor. Oh, okay. Is that something that
Sure. So I think in regards to traffic, we can certainly put up a no outlet sign. That's not a big deal.
I just thought we could crime watch.
Yeah. I don't know. Are you planning to identify neighborhoods with any crime watch paraphernalia, for lack of a better term? I mean, as far as saying, you know, like I know Neighborhood Watch has their signs. Are there any plans for Stevensville Crime Watch to have any sort of...
Yep. There is a couple of our art students at the high school have been working on a little logo for us to attach to Stevensville Crime Watch, and we'll transfer that logo into signage and be able to start putting those as we develop those areas. So, yeah, that's a great question. Sure, Vicki.
Do the people that sign up to be these Crime Watch captains, do they go through any kind of background check?
Yes. Know?
Okay.
Yep.
Because you wouldn't want somebody that's not good to sign up.
Exactly, yes. Yeah, that whole process will be done, and Chief Martin will take care of those background checks as well. Mike.
Much of our community doesn't have any sidewalks. And so the streets are used as sidewalks for kids going to school and playing or something, things like that. And so I happen to live on a street that has a 15-mile-an-hour speed limit because of that. And it is routinely disregarded and rarely enforced. Is this going to encompass any of that by any chance?
And watching for people that are driving too quickly. Speeding, oh, of course.
Is speeding going to be part of the crime watch?
And it should be. That's part of keeping our neighborhood safe. That, like I said, that safety piece is we got to keep our community safe and our businesses and our school and all of our areas safe. So yeah, that's a big piece. Those are the calls that I need to come in through, you know, stopping by and letting me know that you're noticing it.
I can't dial that fast. I grab another.
But yes, I think that's a great piece, and I will make sure that I add that to that list of things that we'll be watching for. Yeah. Thank you.
Sure.
Great, Trevor.
I noticed that you have River Park on there, but not the airport. Are you going to put the airport on some kind of like maybe Captain Park there?
That's a really good idea. I will put that on there and let the chief decide if that's for sure. Yeah, I appreciate that. Yeah. I think that's great. That way we can kind of check in to see who is already up there to begin with. If they're up there during different times of the night, and that may just be that person we want to go and ask to do that. Thank you very much. Yeah.
Any other questions? Thanks, Jim.
Thank you, all of you.
All right, next item is discussion decision to hold a committee of the whole meeting to discuss a draft code of conduct. Mr. Phillips and I met since our last meeting in regards to the code of conduct, and we agreed that a committee of the whole meeting is appropriate for this conversation to continue. So the best date we can come up with through the office staff and availability of folks was Thursday, February 7th at 6:30. So that's what's proposed before you tonight.
What time is
that,
6:30?
6:30. We're suggesting February 7th at 6:30. You can pick your time if you want to be consistent, make it 7. That's okay.
I make a motion to hold a committee of the whole meeting on Thursday, February 7th, 2019 at 6:30 p.m. to discuss the draft code of conduct.
Is there a second? Ms. Holcomb.
I'll second.
Okay, it's been moved by Mr. Phillips and seconded by Ms. Holcomb to hold a committee of the whole meeting on Thursday, February 7th, 2019 at 6:30 p.m. to discuss a draft code of conduct. Any discussion? Public comment? All right, hearing none, I'll call for the vote. Mr. Michelson?
Aye.
Ms. Holcomb?
Aye.
Ms. Barker?
Aye.
And Mr. Phillips?
Aye.
Thank you. Get that on the calendar, get it noticed. Next item is agenda item 10C, a discussion decision to rescind resolution 11 to abolish the park board. Submitted by Ms. Barker.
I'll start it.
Ms. Holcomb?
Actually, I wanted to submit this, but seeing I can't get it in here to sign an agenda in time. The reason why I put this on, as long as I've been on the council, when Mark Anderson was the president and he stepped down, we didn't have a park board for almost 5 years, 6 years, until Ray Smith stood up and became president. It was hard to have meetings because we never had a full agenda when I was on that board. So half the time we couldn't even have meetings. And then we couldn't find anybody to volunteer for that park board. And then he stepped down and we found a couple people to take over. And last year alone there was only 2 meetings. The council did pretty well on making sure everything was ran smoothly when between that 6 years that we'd even have a park board. Last year there was a couple people that all they wanted to do was argue. So suggest that we put it on the agenda to rescind Resolution 11 to abolish the park board.
Okay. Mr. Michelson.
I've heard time and time again about how people have come to the podium and have asked the council for guidance and direction. Where the park is the advisory board, and they are the ones that should be out there looking for things and doing things and then bringing them to the council. So it's kind of backwards. I know the council has to do their work too, but we just don't have the people there right now. You know, if they're there, they're not showing up. And all boards, of course, fall under the purview of you, Mr. Mayor, as you well know. So if there's problems with boards not getting to meetings on time, or boards not having and going to their meetings in a timely fashion, then I would say that you would have to step up your game to make sure that they do that, because you are the ones that runs the boards, not the council. That falls under the mayor, and the mayor only.
I think where the park board specifically came to seek direction from the council was due to they went out and sought an idea. They wanted to develop a master plan for parks and site plans for parks to help us plan where our priorities should lie in spending in parks. They did that and found grant funding with the Stevensville Main Street Association to fund that venture, and then you shot it down. And so their concern is, I don't speak for the board, but at least my perception is that they're seeking direction from you because they went out, they had an idea. In fact, the council did direct them to develop a master plan under the Cruz administration when we received the donation from the Gene Thomas estate. And so they went forward in doing that. They found some funding to help support that. And then we denied them the application for funding, which wouldn't have cost the town anything. And so that's where I think they're seeking direction from the council to say, okay, if that's not a project you want us to work on, what are you willing to let us work on? And, I mean, they could ask the same question of the mayor's office, but frankly, I'd come back to this body and say, what would you like the park board to work on? Because you're the folks, as I am, we're all cross-sections of the community, and I and my constituents, which is the community at large, have ideas, but you work in your wards. You also have ideas of what the community seeks for parks. So it's logically, anybody who wants some direction is going to come to this body and say, where do you want us to move? What's the priority for your constituents? Then they can go develop that plan and bring it back. Mr. Michelson.
I can think of a few examples we sent the park board, like the bathroom out at the Lewis and Clark Park, going on the fourth year now. Came through the park board to get that fixed. Was approved through the council, budgeted by the council, even when Minmac left, Ludington, Cruz, and now you.
Okay, but and the parks don't do the physical work.
No. It was a recommendation. And recommendation by the park board came to us, was approved, budgeted, not done. There's a fence up there at the Edward Valley Park that we've asked guidance on to get done. That never went nowhere, and on and on. These are some of the examples that have came before council that have never...
And I don't think that's failure of the park board.
No, I'm not saying
I think that's failure of the administration. If the park board comes to the council and says, we'd like to see new restrooms in Lewis and Clark Park, the council agrees and says, yes, that's great, let's fund it, and they fund it, then it's back on the mayor's office and the administration with Public Works to get that done. And that's failed. That hasn't been done. Same thing with the fence. We need the council to appropriate the funds to replace the fence. If you don't do that through your budgeting process, we can't move forward on that project. So it's not a park board issue. They're bringing the ideas forward, and council's nodding and saying, okay, great. And then we're failing to implement them as an administration. Ms. Holcomb.
But I think we have always said, even with the fencing, that could have been part of the Gene Thomas beautification. There is the funding there.
You're absolutely right. So what needs to happen, Robin, is in our budget process, Councilperson Holcomb needs to raise her hand and say, I think that we need to budget $15,000 and put that in the budget for a fence in Fall River Valley Park. I can't read your mind. But unfortunately, we don't have a master plan to say, does this fence need to be replaced before that fence needs to be replaced? Ms. Burke.
I disagree with the Gene Thomas fund being towards the fence because it was considered as beautification. If it be a new tree, flowers, so forth, it didn't stay in there for those type of things. We have directed in the past for different things to get done. And I believe that Renee Endicott came up and had said something about some fence or some swings down at the park being needed to be replaced. Prime example, she said that she would take it on and she was shut down. I mean, every time that there's something that's brought forward, I think it gets shut down. And it is very frustrating sitting on that park board. And we had gone out, we took pictures, we did the master plan that we were asked to do. And we're still sitting with nothing. We only met twice last year. And we voted in a president, we voted in a vice president, and we're nowhere. And it doesn't matter what we say, it still goes back to nothing gets done.
Mr. Phillips.
It appears, you know, the park board, you know, seems to be functioning. But it needs the administration support. You know, council members, mayor's office, the board needs their support. You know, I've sat on the planning zoning board, and we had a couple of cases come up, you know, this last year. And one of them, you know, the planning zoning board went through all the effort to vet that project and search out everything. And it came before council and was rejected. And we say, well, why was that rejected? And then I think the same thing happens with the park board. I remember reading in the paper, one of the park board members mentioned, okay, we submitted this project and brought it to council, and the council member says, no, we're not gonna listen to the park board. We're just gonna vote the way we want. And so the park board, you know, our biggest asset to getting things done. You know, we have citizens from the town. We have citizens from the surrounding area because, you know, members of the park board extend outside the city limits. And so we need to draw those people in, and we need to support them and give them the tools to work with. You know, it's really simple, you know. And I think we can get a lot of things done with doing that. Okay. So I don't want to abolish the park board. I want to see it stay where it's at.
Mr. Michelson? The real question is here, you have to hold meetings to communicate, correct?
Absolutely.
Like this here, if we met twice a year as a council, where would this town be?
That's a debatable question.
No, seriously.
I'm not kidding.
It'd be in the crapper. It's like any board. We are a board. We're a functioning body as a government entity, but as a board, they support, we support them, they give us ideas. But when you meet twice a year, and she said in the past they even didn't have a park board for many years, we could sit here and say we've got to work together and do all this other stuff, but when the park board is not even meeting but twice a year, then it's really hard to get interest and get ideas back and forth. Thank you.
So I guess I'll put this into some sort of analogy for you, because I do think that the park board is something that needs to be sustained. If our snowplow breaks, do we stop plowing the streets? Or do we fix the snowplow? Do we need to fix the park board? Or do we just kick it to the side and stop doing parks? That's the question you're faced with, that you've brought forward. You folks have brought this question. Ms. Barker.
Question is, how are we going to get that functioning body? Because obviously we don't meet. And again, you set the agenda for that meeting.
I do not set the agenda. The chair people of those meetings
set the agenda. Then it falls back on our chair people that are not setting those meetings.
And candidly, I'd be happy to put energy into the boards across all of them. I'd love to put more energy into those boards. But as it's been previously stated, the disruption makes it very hard for me to do that.
It's an excuse. I'm sorry.
It's not an excuse, Stacy. I have 10 hours a week to get this job done, and I'm here for 30 of them. And I'd love to spend more time with the park board and with the planning and zoning board and with the airport board, the TIP-TED board, which drives economic development and tax base for this community. But how do you expect me to do it when I'm on the phone with the city attorney hours on end because we have a crap of heap of stuff on the agenda? It's not fair to me or the staff. Mr. Phillips?
Seems to me on the planning and zoning board, we're required to meet so many times a year. I think is that correct?
That's correct.
Four times? Okay. I would think that with the park board, we should possibly write in that, you know, that we meet so many times a year,
sure,
regardless of what's going on. Mm-hmm. And that might draw some interest.
Certainly a solution. I mean, you know, a proposed solution.
Because like I said, the planning and zoning board, you know, we meet four times a year, so. Okay.
Is there any further discussion, or is there a motion or anything?
She put a motion that was never seconded.
Don't think a motion came forward.
No motion.
Ms. Barker.
Maybe this is something that we can go ahead and move forward with keeping the park board. But if it doesn't meet the requirements within a year, it goes away.
It's the administration's intent to bring forward an ordinance that solidifies the park board. We can incorporate a meeting requirement, meeting frequency requirement into that ordinance. Because like we early stated in a previous meeting, all the other boards are established by ordinance. The park board is established by resolution, which is somewhat, it's cumbersome for us to administer because we have to refer to ordinances generally because those are what enforce things, and then resolutions typically set policy. We'd like to bring the park board into an ordinance. We can incorporate that if that's the council's desire. And that'll be forthcoming. Ms. Barker.
I think that would something that would be benefit the park board as well, because then they can actually make a decision on something instead of coming all the time and saying, hey, we're putting this forth, but nothing's getting done. Mm-hmm. Like I said, I think maybe something that we need to look at get with the park board and find out what their responses are and find out if they've got input that they could put in on it too.
So what I'm hearing based on some council feedback is that maybe we move forward, we leave things as they are today, and let the administration come back with an ordinance that will incorporate meeting frequencies and maybe some sort of delegated decision-making authority that doesn't exist already. Ms. Holcomb.
Does the other boards have that decision-making? Because I thought all the boards that were an advisory board.
There are,
because even the TIP doesn't even make decisions. They have to come before the council. Mm-hmm. So no boards have a decision making. They're all just an advisory board.
And you can change that. If you think that the park board should be able to make a decision in a certain fashion, you write the laws. Mm-hmm. It's up to you folks to hear what the community's desires are, and if it turns out that our advisory boards should be making some low-level decisions that need to be somehow vetted through the administration versus through the council, then you can set that up. It's your wheel to spin. So, if there's nothing further, we'll move on. Okay. Item D, discussion decision, town council direction to the mayor to establish an office for the town council and a council reference library within 30 days. Councilmember Michelson.
Yes. Due to the recent chain of events that started this last fall with the complaints and everything, it got to the point where I didn't even feel comfortable coming in here alone, so I always brought a Stacy or a witness with me. I cannot do a lot of the research I'd like to do, resolutions, agendas, ordinances, and the reason I put that out there broad so that I could rein it back in. I don't have a problem coming in here. I don't need to be in my own office. I don't need to be somewhere secluded without cameras, blah, blah, blah. If you could give me access to that office like it used to be, in my 3 years as a council person, to go in that office during working hours when all the ladies are there. There used to be a desk right across from, and Brandon, you know that, right across from Denise, where we could just sit down right there in front of everybody. I'm not going to steal anything. I'm not going to take anything. You can watch me on everything. And I can just look at my research and I can say, Audrey or Denise or April, could you make a copy of this for me? And they said, yes. Done. Over. That's all I want. Right now, we can't even get in there to get anything.
I guess a more serious question that needs to be asked, Mr. Michelson, is I'm unaware of any time that any staff has denied you access to the office.
I've never really asked for it except one time, and as you well know, back in our heated thing between me and you, when you said you didn't even want me in your office, in that office, we had to have permission first, set up an appointment to see you, and also once when I wanted to get records from Audrey to get the ordinances, she said you can come in, but today's not a good day. I understood that, but I thought, you know, you give me a desk in a corner, I don't need a phone, I don't need a computer. Just give me a desk so I have access to those things where I can sit down and I can do my research in front of you at your working hours. I don't need to be here on a Sunday or a Saturday, 24 hours. If that works for you guys, that's what I want. And not just for me, but for her or for her. And Jerry, he's retired. He could come in anytime and do his research and sit down.
So as you're aware, our policy on office access, which remains unchanged, is that if you're invited, once the lock went on, if you were invited into the office or you requested access and that was authorized by one of the clerks, there was no problem. To date, I don't know of any circumstance where you've requested access to the office and been told, no, you can't come in.
You were the only one that told me, that's fine.
No, I have never told you. I have never, ever, do not go there. I have never said you are not allowed in the office.
We won't get into that, okay?
We don't need to. I never said it.
Anyway, if you could let me in the office, put me back in a corner with a little desk. I could sit down and do my research to look at council minutes, agendas, and ordinances. I don't have a problem with anything else.
Ms. Holcomb.
I called four or five cities. No other place has a lock on their door that won't allow their council to walk in. I go, well, do you have to get permission or make an appointment to come get something? No. As soon as you ask for it, they went and got it. It didn't matter if it was council, it didn't matter if it was town people. I just feel we're being locked out.
Mr. Lucidi, do you have a statement?
I do. I have contacted the Ravalli County
clerk recorder,
and she said that the biggest problem with Stevensville is nothing is in their offices. All of our documents should be stored in their offices. And then we have copies here that it doesn't matter if something happens to the documents, because we've got everything backed up with the county. Right now, she said nobody should have access to those documents. Make copies left and right for anybody who wants them, but don't give their original documents. So she's advising me to protect those documents until we can get them stored in the county's offices. The issue that you are talking about, Mr. Michelson, is you weren't sure what you were looking for. I'm happy to get whatever you wanted. I even said, give me some ideas and I'll do the research for you.
You did say that.
I happened to be in court that day, and 20 minutes later, court proceedings started, so I couldn't do anything, and I was going off the advice of our county recorder. And so that's where I'm coming from. You have never been denied access to information. I'm happy to give you whatever you want, whenever you want it, but I will help you with the research until we get these documents, our original documents, secured. Not saying I don't trust you or anybody in the public, but it's my job. If something happens to those documents, the responsibility is on me. Nobody else, me. So
what you're saying, if I came in here, you still wouldn't feel me safe sitting in that corner and looking at him and saying, could you make a copy of this?
As long as we're around, and no, I wouldn't have a problem. But if we just, like, you wanted to take the binders out.
Oh, no, I wouldn't. They would never leave that office. Okay,
but in the case you said, could you just give me the documents and you'll go do the research? No, I was not going to allow that.
No, I meant to stay right there in the corner.
But anyway, so the information's available to you. It will help you get whatever you need. It's always been the case. That's never been denied.
But sometimes I really don't know what I'm looking there for until I find it. So I go in there and I do my research and I find it at a desk, like I've always did when Stacy Bartlett was here. Never in Denise. None of them ever had a problem. Brandon had been in there when he was an officer. He seen me do it. I sat down in that corner and I did all my research and got whatever I wanted. And when I wanted something copied, I'd say, Stacy or Denise, could you make a copy of this for me? And they did it.
And Ms. Mayor, I'm apologizing for not following the council rules and directing my responses to you. I apologize to council.
Appreciate it.
But I will be happy to provide information as I've always been doing so in the past.
So a couple things that may help with this issue of access to records is that with our new website, which we plan to launch on the 1st of February, at least the last 5 years of records that we have will be archived on that website for anybody's access. Eventually, we'll get to the point where all of our ordinances, all of our resolutions are on that website. That will take some time to get all of those scanned in electronically and sent over to MuniCode to put onto the website. Our code of ordinances is already accessible there. And that's a codified version of the actual ordinance. So those tools we've implemented in hopes that it'll help you folks access the information that you need to do research, as well as the public, because it'll be in a searchable database, which is not something we've ever had before. To put some things into perspective here, the town of Stevensville was incorporated in 1899. We have zero records before 1930. They all burned up in a fire. So if you want something from before 1930, we don't have it. We have to make it up. I'm not kidding, Stacey. You don't have to roll your eyes at it.
I didn't do it, Brandon.
So...
Excuse me.
that's why we're being very careful here and cautious to make sure that at some point, and again, that'll be a lengthy process to get these ordinances and all these original documents into the county records and recorded, because nothing's being recorded. Mr. Michelson.
So, dear Mayor, since you are the executive of the staff and the town, do you have a problem with me or Jerry or Stacy, a fellow council member, Holcomb, coming in and asking, go back, if you stuck it just a desk back there in the chair, and if we went back there, just like we used to do?
No, we wouldn't have any problem granting access. And again, that's going to be up to the clerks in the office discretion. Mm-hmm. You know, it depends on what's going on. That's why we push appointments, because this is a very busy office. You may have called five other communities and said, well, how do you run your office? No other community in the state has a per capita spending amount of $300 per person. Everybody else is way higher than that. We're doing a lot with very little money. And so we do ask for appointments so that we can take the time to give that individualized customer service. Mr. Michelson.
And the point I think is well taken is the governing body, which is the town council, they make the laws. We do the resolutions. We do the ordinances.
Absolutely.
So there's got to be a level of trust there. And I'm sorry if Mr. Cribbini doesn't trust me or some of the others. I think a way to gain that trust back, instead of staying way out here, would be to come back in and meet in the middle, if it's in there. And if she still doesn't have the trust or something happens, well, shame on me, shame on whatever. Then we work back and go back in. I talked to Brian about it. He said that would be a great idea to start bringing people back together in here. Because last year was a disaster. All of us.
And my advice to you in helping towards that effort is a conversation like this can easily be had in my office across the desk.
Yeah.
Over a cup of coffee. Mm-hmm. We don't necessarily need to drag a conversation like this out in front of the public.
They know it anyway.
It's not a transparency issue, but this conversation could have saved us some time, and you would have gotten the same answer. So any further remarks or direction? Okay.
I'm going to make a motion. Did you make a motion?
We're not making a motion on this part.
Unless you want to, there's, I mean. Do you?
We need to. We don't need to?
All right, we'll move on to 10E. Discussion on the responsibilities of mayor to enforce council rules during council meetings. Mr. Michelson.
This wasn't meant directly at you, Brian. It's meant for all of us in a lot of ways. I think we need to tighten up our ship. And at the November 8th meeting, when some members of public got up and directed their quotes towards Councilmember Bartlett and Councilmember Holcomb, those comments should have went through you. You are the governing mayor, and when it got out of hand, you should have said point of order and stopped it, which you didn't. And for Audrey to say that it was they were very respectful and everything, well, if they were so respectful, then how come both council members are crying at the end of the meeting? I think that going forward, if you would just take in consideration that the councils get beat to death quite a bit, and rightfully so, we're not perfect. You see, please don't laugh. It's not funny. We're the governing body. We have just as much right to be here as you. And to sit there and smirk at me when I'm trying to tell you to try to do your meetings in a better fashion is wrong. And The council's getting a little tired of sometimes where you interrupt people, not just the council, but you interrupt the public. You could work on that. And you've allowed many times to let the public address council members directly during a council meeting when you should, their comments should be directed to you. And to you, then it goes to them. That's Robert's Rules of Order. So, on a good point, you've been here a year, and since the very beginning, Mayor Dewey, you've come a long ways. You really have. For the first 6 or 7 months, you were kind of all over the place. I see you gaining confidence. I see you getting better at what you're doing. There's always room for improvement, not just with you, but all of us as we work together. The main reason I put this up here is I don't want this year to start out like last year. Because if we're going to go down this road like we did last year, then we might as well turn in our badges. Because you put a smear on the town, put a smear on us, you've had sleepless nights. My God, all of us have sleepless nights. And look at poor Audrey. She got jumped in the middle of the fray when right in the middle of the fire, she was warned, and through her complaint, she had many sleepless nights. None of us deserve that. I'm not saying it's your fault. It's all our fault. But you are still the presiding officer, and you run the meetings. And I'm asking you just to be a little more diligent and run a little tighter ship. And I think we do that, and through that, we can all get along a little better. Thank you.
Okay. To address the alleged smirk, I have a hard time hearing you say that it's not fair that the council gets beat up when for the last 11 months, or excuse me, 13 months, I've been beat up at this table by three of you. That isn't fair.
But it's fair for you to be writing stuff that, or making comment allegations in the paper?
I think that I'm happy to enforce the rules as they're written, which will include any exchange between you and who stands at that podium will come through me. I'll enforce the rules on the public and on you and on you and on you and on you. I can enforce rules. I can be a stickler. I'd much rather we just go through the meeting calmly and get through things in an ordinary fashion. But if we need to be stickler by the rules and I need to be a jerk about it, I can do that. I don't have a problem. I don't like to, but I can. That's the council's direction. It's interesting to me that this isn't directed at you, Mayor, but you recite essentially a report card on how on my performance for the last 12 months. I don't think that's fair either. I'm not necessarily accountable to the council. I'm accountable to the public. That's who elects me.
True.
There is a separation of powers, and it needs to be made very clear. You are not my boss. You are not my boss.
Yes, we are.
You are elected by the people.
We are your boss.
No. You set policy for the organization, which I implement. There's a difference. And I have a memorandum from Brian West, if you'd like to read it. We'll move on. 10F. Discussion decision on council's direction to the mayor to abolish all town social media sites, websites, and cease video recording and broadcasting of town council meetings. Mr. Michelson.
Well, this wasn't my agenda item, but I can take something that I read.
You submitted it. Your name's on there.
Yeah.
Unless Ms. Barker wants to take it. She was the second member submitting. Ms. Barker?
I guess some of the concerns that I have, you know, we're not, it's not that we're trying to get rid of everything. The problem that I have is that the freedom of speech is being taken away. Not only as was stated in the Revalley or in the Stevensville Star that a spouse discrepancy, no, it's not a spouse's discrepancy for one. I have gone through after meetings and seen other comments that were made by other people, and those comments were taken out. Not just, you're saying that there's a filter on it for vulgarity and everything else. Prime example, I had gone in to see the who had made comments on the fact of the new position for the public works position. I believe that your mother-in-law had commented that, Brandon, this might be something for you. It pays 8 times more than what you're making now. And your comment was, no, it makes 10 times more what I make now. I don't do it for the pay. Somebody else, my spouse, commented on it. Boom, yours was gone. Tell me that these aren't getting deleted by somebody, if it be you as an administrator, all your comments were gone off of that site. 2 comments he made on there, and there was no derogatory, there was nothing in there, and they were gone again too. If we're gonna have public meetings, the filter needs to be shut off or comments need to be shut off, and we don't see any of them. That camera right there should be just of the meeting itself. No comments. That may stop part of this. What is going on in that site has been great. It's very informational. But I still think that how we're monitoring it, and I looked at other websites to see how they had their monitoring done. A lot of the different places have policies. Maybe we need to put a policy in place for social media.
If I may, any comments I make on social media, personally, I reserve the right to delete those personally, and so does my mother-in-law. Mr. Michelson.
Not if it's a government-run website, which this is, and not if it's on a municipal page. You do not have that right.
Oh, absolutely I do. If Mrs. Motley makes a comment and then decides later she wants to retract that, she can delete her comment. I can't stop her from doing that.
That's why we need to have a, like the email policy that we didn't have, that's why we need to have a social media policy.
But we don't have the physical ability to stop her from deleting her comments. Those are her comments and she can retract them or post them as she sees fit. Mr. Michelson.
Can I take a few minutes and read this, please?
Sure.
Social media records in Montana. Montana public records law and social media. Social media records in Montana are subject to the Montana Public Records Act, Montana Code Annotated, Title II, Chapter 6. This law defines records as any paper, correspondence, form, book, photograph, microfilm, magnetic tape, computer storage, media, map, drawing, or other document, including copies of the record required by law to be kept as part of the official record, regardless of the form of characteristics, the definitions, covers posts made by government entities and social media. The Montana Operations Manual contains policies, procedures, and standards applicable to the operations of Montana state government. This online resource includes guidelines for social media use, which recognizes the importance of social media to government and clearly states that, under Montana law, public records include records in the electronic form 2-6-101A MCA, therefore communication to or from state personnel through social media is likely presumed to be a public record. Many cities and counties already have policies in place that clearly state that social media records in Montana are governed by the Montana Public Records Law. The City of Great Falls notes that, like email posts on social media sites, may constitute agency legal records. I could go on and on. But the bottom line is, your personal Facebook page is one thing, but once we become live streaming here, it all becomes a matter of public record. And those are like our e-town emails or resolutions, anything in there. When you step across the line into the government, we have to draw a strict policy in place to make sure that these things are archived and kept, right in all in here. I called Great Falls, I called Hamilton, I called Missoula. They have strict guidelines. Of course, they all have their different things, but I think it would be of great importance that if we want to do this right and do it going forward, I don't have a problem with it. I think it's a great tool. It's the age we live in now. But I think we have to go by guidelines. And when we go by these guidelines and adhere to them, it's a great tool. So I think it would be great. And a good thing for the town is if we draw up, like we did the email policy, and I'd be glad, because I've already started on it, to get a draft going. Just like Brian had sent us, you know,
the Missoula one and the Hamilton one. Remember the draft on the email? I could get some social media policies going and then bring them for you, do a town meeting, and then get a good solid social media policy in place. That way we can still use what we have today. But that way there would be more guidelines and more policies to adhere by. Do you agree with that?
I do. I guess I'm confused. If it's the council's desire to have a policy in place, then why isn't that the agenda item? I think you've got a community all worked up about abolishing something that really you just are seeking a policy to govern. Ms. Barker?
I don't think it would have been worked up if it wasn't for the fact that you posted that we were abolishing or getting rid of the police department, the fire department, all these different departments on that page.
Well, the submittal said that you were intending to abolish all town social media websites and cease video recording, and all town social media websites includes the fire department, the police department, the swimming pool. Mr. Michelson?
That's correct. The reason we put that in there is because you cover all bases when you're a council. You start with the big end, because if you leave something out, as you well know, you can't add it onto it on the agenda. So we kept the broad scope and arranged it in. We never intended to even do anything with the police department or the fire department. The only two sites that we looked at was the live streaming and the municipal government, because when you posted the last agenda item on there and you highlighted the fire department and the police department, by law you can't do that because that is a government page.
It's not highlighted, it's tagged, Bob.
It was still on the agenda item, was it not?
On the post for the agenda, yes.
It was on there. That'd be like doing this then. That'd be like adding to this agenda item after it's already been on there. If this was an agenda item like this.
No, the post itself, Bob, is just a synopsis of what's on the agenda. And
it's still a government page. You're using government. It isn't a social page for like at home. When you cross the line into government, like I said.
Okay. So to bring this back in, because we're off. Your decision tonight is whether or not you're going to abolish all town social media websites and cease video recording and broadcasting at town council meetings. If it's the council's desire to have a policy in place that governs social media, then either that should have been the agenda item, or I can consider that as some sort of informal direction tonight that we can begin formatting. But that's not a decision you guys can make tonight that we're going to move forward on a social media policy. That's not what you told the public you were going to do. What you told the public you were going to do was to abolish social media. So you really need to decide tonight, are you or are you not going to abolish social media? Mr. Michelson.
What if we make this motion? I make a motion that we abolish all town media websites, not all, but the live streaming and the municipal government website until we have a policy in place. So we
can be Can you repeat the motion?
I can't, I'm sorry.
Can you restate your motion, please, Mr. Michelson?
I make a motion that we abolish the live streaming site and the municipal government site until we have a policy in place that adheres to all sections of this.
Okay, Mr. Michelson's made a motion to abolish to abolish live streaming sites and municipal websites until a policy is in place to govern them.
That's correct.
Is there a second? The motion dies for lack of a second. Is there an alternative motion? Okay. Then we'll move on. Item 10G. Discussion decision to modify the Stevensville Municipal Code to require the Chief of Police, the Chief of the Fire Department, the Town Clerk, all deputy clerks, and the Finance Officer / Treasurer to be residents of the Town of Stevensville. Mr. Michelson.
Yeah. The reason I put this on here wasn't to get rid of the current ones, because I knew you can't do that. They're grandfathered in. The reason we did that is because I did some research and did some phone calls to other towns. And this town has never really had a policy in place as to what, who's in town, who's out of town as far as working, and I asked Mr. West to look into this, and he said, so in summarization, the Montana Constitution authorized local government entities, cities, counties, and towns, and gives authority to the legislature to set up qualifications. The legislature has adopted a number of laws that require residency, but beyond that has authorized local governments to adopt their own requirements. Stevensville has more or less adopted the existing requirements under MCA, which vary from officer to officer, but has not ever created additional restrictions to date. I would presume this is a reason in part for giving the low population of the town and a limited supply of applicants residency restrictions can cause. I recognize the town is considering explicit residency requirements with the upcoming agenda. I have advised the mayor and the town it is within the right to adopt explicit residency requirements for officers in a rational relationship to the legitimate government purpose. My sole caution is that the application of the requirement should only apply to the new hires and could not affect someone who has already been appointed and is currently holding an officer's position while residing in the town of Steve Plymouth. So I think we need to draw an ordinance as to how far out, because I do realize myself that it's hard to get good working people. In fact, if you look in the office now, I do not believe anybody lives within the city limits.
Correct.
If you just had town within the city limits, then it limits your resources to a good person, to somebody that could be a...
It does.
I think, though, that there should be guidelines as far as maybe a mile limits out there. A lot of towns have like 10 miles, 50 miles out that people, you know, you have to have a boundary, is what I'm told. It just can't be free will.
Well, I don't think we have to have a boundary. I mean, we're completely illegal in the system we have now.
We are, but a lot of towns do it for insurance purposes too, litigation purposes.
What would be the advantage of litigation or insurance to having somebody live within a 10-mile radius of City Hall?
Time to get there to if something were to happen to them.
Okay. Is there a direction from the council or conversation? Mr. Michelson.
I would like to make a motion that we modify the Stevensville Municipal Code to have the officers of the town, we could set a guideline to where the boundaries are, where they have to live. Of course, it wouldn't apply to the chief or the fire chief, and then they have to be here. Am I right, Jeff?
It's up to you guys to set that line, if you want me to be a town resident or not.
Okay, your motion is gone by the wayside on us. That became a very long motion, essentially. Can you restate your motion, please?
Well, I can't restate it to this point, because if I restate it to this point, then that bounds it right in the city limits.
So your first motion, essentially, we're scratching that because it became a conversation, and I don't think that the clerk could record all of that as a motion. So what I'm giving you the opportunity to do is a do-over.
I make a motion to modify the Stevensville Municipal Code to require the town clerk, all deputy clerks, and the finance officer and treasurer to be residents of or around the town of Stevensville, to be determined
okay.
by the council.
Is there a second? Ms. Barker.
Second motion.
Okay, it's been moved by Mr. Michelson and seconded by Ms. Barker to modify the Stevensville Municipal Code to require the town clerk, all deputy clerks, and the finance officer slash treasurer to be residents of the town of Stevensville or surrounding area to be determined.
Correct.
Okay. Council comment.
My biggest,
Mr. Phillips.
My biggest concern about limiting, you know, the pool of applicants, you know, to just a small geographical area like the city or a mile or so out is, you know, we have talented people here in the community and the surrounding area. But oftentimes, if you want good quality people, you're going to have to go a little bit further, I'm afraid. You know, I've heard a report that, you know, about 60% of our population in town go to Hamilton or Missoula to work, you know, and there's some people that come from Hamilton and Missoula to work here because they're qualified in the jobs they do. And what I'm thinking is that to get the best qualified people to do the job of serving the community, we have to expand it out even further. Not just a few miles, but maybe even going to Missoula. We have, I know locally, we have deputy sheriffs from Missoula County living here in town that commute to Missoula. And also, there's a good example. I don't see why we can't, you know. In a bigger city, yes, there's a geographical area where you can draw, you have a bigger pool of qualified people in a bigger community. With Stevensville, we need to draw out a little bit further out.
That's what I said, to be determined. Like I told him, 10, 15 miles, I didn't, you know what I'm saying.
So,
but there has to be a boundary, I think.
Yeah, my recommendation is, you know, that we determine what those boundaries are, maybe a CAL meeting, you know, to determine that, if we really do need that.
Okay, any further council discussion? Okay, I'll call for public comment. Please step to the podium, state your name and address for the record.
My name is Joe Moore, 514 Central. I had this one at the top of my list just to come in tonight. I would just remind you that according to the town code, under Article 4, Officers and Employees, Section 2, 117, Vacancy of an Officer, it states in Section 7, this subsection, obviously you've already talked about the first part, does not apply to those appointed to an appointed municipal officer who resides outside of town limits with the approval of the council and within a distance of town approved by the council. It's already in the code. So I would call to mind the fact that there are two outstanding job descriptions right now online on our page due February 1st, and in the general job description, the job description for the part-time clerk and the job description for the building official, there is no reference for where you live. It doesn't have anything there about where do you live, how far out do you live, what town do you live in. It sounds like from the code that you've already accepted and you're living by, that it is approved within, that is the approval of the council and within a distance of the town approved by the council. That's something that you would just have as a discussion with somebody during an interview. Provided it's not, say, for instance, a critical need like the fire department or something, or however you want to establish that. But you already have that in code. It's already in the town code. And within a distance approved by the council. The distance approved by the council says it all. I agree with Mr. Phillips. It's very difficult to put a time distance together to have somebody come in and get a job.
Further public comment. Ms. Perry.
Is it all right if I stay here to speak, please?
Yes.
Jan Heron, 503 Charlotte. I think that one of the most important things that our community wants is good service, good people to serve our community. And one perfect example is our school. And Vicki, you maybe could help me with this, but a very high percentage of our teachers in this town are not from Stevensville. They come from Missoula, they come from the South. And if this were such a great idea, why wouldn't schools be putting these limitations on? I think you need to think about that when you address this. You're just looking for good quality people. Why do you need to dictate where they live?
For the public comment, Mr. Monk.
When I moved here, I applied for a job. It was required. I live in Temp, and I work for the school. That was a requirement for years and years. I was talking to a young teacher the other day. He teaches in Stevensville. He hunted for 2 years to find reasonable housing in Stevensville because they were pushing him to live in town. He found a place in a neighboring town that fit his budget and his pay scale, and he went and told them about it, said, I have to go there, and that's acceptable. But there is still a push to live in town by the school, even though many of them don't because the prices here are pretty high. Thank you.
Look on it. Mr. Sharkey.
Two or three St. Mary's Drive, Michael Schroeder. So, Mr. Mayor, I'd suggest that one thing you haven't brought up tonight is if you are hiring for a position within the town, and an applicant that lives in Kalispell sees the help wanted ad, are you going to let them apply for the job, or do they have to move here first?
That remains unclear.
Yeah, you might want to put that into your considerations. And, you know, while we're at it, why don't we insist that people work in town as well? And maybe we should also insist their children attend school in Stevensville. And perhaps they should have to be property taxpayers in town. You know, this is silly. Just as silly as those three things I just spoke about. I think you're wasting your time. I think tonight's agenda was a total waste of my time. I came here hoping to see something happen, and all I saw is you people just decided to abandon everything you came here to discuss or decide. And unfortunately, this has become typical, in my opinion. I hope you can come to some kind of resolution amongst yourselves and get beyond all this baloney that we've come to expect when we're here and get on with the town's business. I mentioned earlier there aren't any sidewalks on my block. There haven't been sidewalks there since the town was built.
Wow.
We're talking about sidewalks.
Sharky, we're taking public comment on whether people live in there.
Well, my point is you're wasting time. You could be talking about sidewalks. Something important.
Thank you. Further public comment. Mr. Marcus.
Just a kind of a procedural question. If you have two applicants for a posted job, and one lived in Missoula and one lived in Stevensville, the one in Missoula being very qualified and one living in Stevensville marginally qualified, and you told the Missoula applicant they weren't going to be considered, would that kind of be discrimination? I'm not considered for a job I'm qualified for because I'm willing to show up on time because I live 25 miles away instead of within the town limits?
Only if we didn't have a policy in place that allowed us to do that. So if we have a policy, an ordinance in place that says that you must live within XYZ, then no, it's not discriminatory. But if we don't have that policy in place and we pick a candidate who we like them more because they live here, but they're not necessarily qualified, that could be a problem for us. Further public comment. Ms. Motley.
Vicki Motley, 318 Ninth Street. I would like to see you not vote this through. I think that you're limiting your options. I think there's a lot of really good people that live. They might live in Hamilton. And they would be excellent people to work in our town. And maybe that would encourage them once they're working for the town to move their, you know, move down here, but to automatically limit that, I think, is not in the best interest of the town.
Chief Motley.
Jeff Motley, 13 Ninth Street. It seems to me that the motion on the table is exactly what we already have. Had anybody apply, I live within an area around town that make it to work. The motion on the table is they live within town or a distance around town that we deem workable. Isn't that what we're already doing? We're hiring people that we deem are workable to come to work on time to do the job. We're already doing it. The motion is stated, so I don't understand why we have the motion.
Any further public comment? Mr. Michelson.
Jess was right, but left out the part to be determined as far as the radius.
To be determined.
Mr. Michelson.
The city of Hamilton specifically states that their employees have to live in the city limits.
Okay. Is there any further comment from council or public comment?
That's not true.
Okay. Thank you.
I know employees that aren't there.
We're out of order here. Ms. Barker.
I would have to say I disagree with that because we have Mr. Weitz that works in Hamilton.
He works for the county, not the city.
Well, county.
But they're still, we're limiting it. I think we need to.
I think the other consideration is that Hamilton is a community of twice our size. Oh, yeah. There are 4,000 people in city limits.
I would just do that as an example.
That's a much larger population to pull from. Okay, there's no further council comment or public comment. Call for the vote on the motion. Okay. Councilmember Phillips?
No.
Councilmember Barker?
No.
Councilmember Holcomb?
No.
Councilmember Michelson?
Yes.
Okay. Motion fails 3-1. That concludes the business portion of our agenda. I'll keep my executive report brief. I'm pleased to report to you that the surveillance cameras at Lewis and Clark Park are finally installed and as of Monday are fully operational. As we work through that, the staff continue to learn to use the system. We've not necessarily had all opportunity to experience what it's capable of. We continue to move forward on the reorganization of staff roles and responsibilities. Some modifications have been made due to various circumstances. Primarily, the clerk will not be assuming duties from the building and planning department, but instead we've made it work so that we can allocate her as a full-time town clerk. Still creating the court clerk position. This was doable within our current adopted budget. We analyzed the figures again and we were able to make that work. Positions are being recruited now. Additionally, in that reorganization, some cemetery records have already begun their transfer into our offices, and so far that transition has gone well. We're moving forward on an appraisal of the Middleburn Fork Road property adjacent to our well field. So we can come back to the council with more information on that property so you can formulate an offer should you choose to move forward on that purchase. That's all I have for the executive report. Council comments. Ms. Barker.
I would just like to thank Dean Weitzit for being our sexton for so many years. However, how it was approached on his job coming to an end, I don't think is very appropriate. I think it needs to be held in a more tactful way, maybe a call in or something to them to let them know that it was his job was ending. Dean has done a lot. He cleaned up some records that were a mess at one time, and I hope that now that it is in the town's hands, that it's always been in the town's hands, but yet in the office now that these people can hold up to what Dean did before, reading those families. On Memorial Day, when somebody needed help finding a plot with a grieving family, so forth, I hope that they can hold up to the end of what Dean did, and we appreciate what Dean did.
Council comment. Ms. Holcomb.
I have to concur what Stacey just said. Really do appreciate what Dean has done for many years with the cemetery. Just a few things. I would like us to review the purchasing policy, the event permits, and Resolution 281A. I know our attorney has brought it up to us many times that he would like us to revisit this resolution, and I am in agreement with him. So I would like for us to think about bringing those items up on the agenda to talk about them, including the social media policy, and bring it up correctly on the agenda. We keep talking about moving forward, and tonight, wow. First, I would like to say my spouse has never been on Facebook. My husband doesn't even have a Facebook page. So that was very disappointing to have you say that. And for you to make comments like this about your counsel, I mean, this is an embarrassment. I mean, you talk about we're always bashing you, but you're bashing us constantly in the paper. So before we can move forward, we need to stop this, for one. And then it was brought to my attention that when you did the press release for the police department on what happened at the school, you put it out there before the school could even contact any of the parents. I personally, I'm not talking for any other council, I think the press releases need to be done by the fire department and the police department. Unless they ask for your help and helping, like just getting it out there. But I honor the understanding that the school is not very happy right now. I don't know if anybody has talked to you about it, but that's what I was told. So I would feel that the press releases need to be done by the fire department and the police department. That's all I have.
Thank you, Council Connor. Any board reports? Okay, hearing nothing else, we'll adjourn.
Thank you.